everybody, Rooney and Cabo, and welcome to the Continental Cadences, an Africana podcast centered around exploring African expressions in hip hop, where rap artists showcase their talent, culture, and community. From the deeply rooted history of hip hop in Africa to the modern day MCs spearheading the legacy they inherited, Continental Cadences continues conversations around how African hip hop just hits different. This podcast is brought to you by Hip Hop and Social Change in Africa. We're your hosts, Deandra Blake,
Adarshini Vijesh,
and Abiba Moncrief.
Today, we're talking about how African hip hop captures the diverse identities that come from African diasporic artists through use of languages, aesthetics, and political framing.
Okay, awesome. Hey, everyone, it's Abiba. And I just want to start off this conversation by talking about an article that I recently read called Digging Up Rap's Roots by Lauren Lee. It's a CNN article about the history of hip hop in Africa. But one of the big things I kind of had qualms with while I was reading it was the way she was framing hip hop in Africa as if it was a response to hip hop in America. So basically she kind of acts like hip hop in Africa is just African people doing something that comes from Americans and they're just emulating American realities, which completely disregards all of the multiple identities and kind of nuances that hip hop in Africa contains based off of like the political positioning of African people and like the kinds of lives and contexts that they're living that has created the hip hop in Africa movement.
Okay, so that reminds me of Sampa the Great's album, As Above, So Below, where she was paying homage to her Zambian roots, and I believe it was Zamrock, which is supposed to be a musical fusion genre that emerged in the 1970s in Zambia, right, Abiba?
Yeah.
Does that sound right? Okay, perfect. And I remember I was reading an article, and she said that it was fitting to pay homage to those that came before her and to kind of merge that past, present, and future identity within herself. I think the way she described it was passing the baton from one generation to the next. And obviously, like, that is from the continent. Like, it's not like there is an identity that is there on the continent, the past, present, and future, like she said. And it's not just kind of piggybacking off of the America.
Yes, exactly. I feel like another way that like we really see this in hip hop in Africa is like the way artists would include like indigenous languages in their rap too. Mm-hmm. So instead of kind of framing hip hop in Africa as being like, oh, we're just doing whatever we see like NWA doing in the 90s, they're like, no, I have something to say and I'm going to say it in my language, which shows that it's for their own demographic. Like it's because it's for an African audience. DeAndre, do you have anything to add about that?
Yes, I do. Absolutely. Especially one of the things that I'm very passionate about is talking about how African languages are used as a means of communication, but also through language, through the words that they use, they're emanating their culture and they're talking about who they are. And so one of the artists that that makes me think of is Shoma Josie. Shoma Josie is a South African rap artist. She also does different styles as well, but she specifically uses different languages, including Swahili and Tsonga, which are both speaking in different parts, especially East Africa as well as South Africa. Two of her songs that I wanted to, really three of her songs that I wanted to highlight is John Cena, which is her song that she primarily is using Kiswahili. And in the song, she's kind of talking, in her interview, she kind of talked about how it is one of a breakup song. But because of her use and language in there, it's also pulling on her identity. We're also able to see like who she is and where she is coming from. And she's talking about how people want to be tough like John Cena. They want to like, act like they can be cool and all of that stuff when they're really not. And she kind of uses that to also be a little bit braggadocious and being like, yeah, I'm that girl. And I think you kind of played, but it don't even matter because I'm that girl, you know? And even in her other interview that I looked at, I think this one was with BBC, And she talks about how, as a South African woman, as an artist, she really believes that young Africans are the ones that are inheriting their culture. And as her artist, through her artistry, you can really see it in her videos as well as in her songs. She's purposefully talking about who she is and how her culture and what it means to her. And she literally talks and she says that she's always going to take her culture with her. And I think that's something that's really pronounced.
South Africa, I think we're still a little bit behind in terms of embracing ourselves and our Africanness. But when I brought Shibelani, and I wear Shibelani in all my performances, but when I brought that on and I kind of, you know, I wear a shorter one than the traditional one, and I, you know, the colors I use are always different, and I'm always trying to innovate it, but I'm always trying to bring my culture with me all the time. But I suppose it really resonates with a lot of people, the idea that, like, let's take back our cultures, but also not make it an impractical way, like how our grandmothers wore it like 100 years ago. Like, how does it feel? How does it look to be a young African today?
And I think this is a great pivoting point to kind of talk about how African aesthetics is also very important when it comes to talking about identity, right? A lot of times in the media, whether it is talking about like wars or like negative things in Africa, sickness, poverty, bad economics, corruption, et cetera, I think those things are often really pushed when it comes to talking to the about the African continent outside of Africa. And sometimes that's the first impression that people are getting. And so because of that deeply rooted anti-African colonial history, it's very important, I think, that rap artists are using their aesthetics or using cultural wear, things that you only really see in their country that are like unique to them in their music, and kind of using that, because music is also something that really brings people in, and it encourages curiosity. And so from there, I want to talk a little bit about Falls. Falls, a Nigerian artist, and recently he just came out with a song about 8 months ago called No Less. And it is kind of talking a little bit about Nigerian high energy party atmosphere. It's a pretty dancey song, but it also has a lot of socialization and talking about things like with friends as well. And through Falls' rapping, through his confidence, through his cadence, through his rap style, he's kind of talking about how, once again, he's his man, he's created his career, he has this high status, but through the video, a lot of the people that are being showcased are in their cultural gowns. They're wearing their gilets. They got the colors. Like, they're really here, and they're there, and they're showing that, you know, they're only taking more. They're only wanting more for themselves. And he really emphasizes having a state of balance when it comes to, you know, creating your riches as well as, you know, being purposeful within who you are. And so I think that's also a very important thing to talk about. And even through the song where he's talking about like where he talks about like romance as well as like people within society and stuff like that, it's really about social dynamics, which is also a part of the culture, because, you know, who are we without our community?
Yeah, I like that you bring up the topic of aesthetics as well, because I also want to hit on how these African aesthetics kind of come up throughout the diaspora. Especially last semester, I was able to meet South African artist Zulu Mecca. And when I was asking her about how she kind of got into like what her first exposure of hip hop was, she talked a little bit about how 90s hip hop talked a lot about, well, 90s American hip hop talked a lot about these like African imagery. So you have people kind of like Zulu Nation and like those kinds of things. So Zulu Mecca is like, wait a minute, I'm actually Zulu. Like, let me actually kind of, you know, come and step into this space with like this understanding and this interpretation. But I think we also see this today, especially through like Innie's Pink Black Girls, where she really just spends a lot of time kind of like glorifying and highlighting the beauty in African aesthetic, not only in kind of like cultural aesthetics and looks, but also just kind of like in the physicality and in like Black female phenotypes. She spends a lot of time just kind of praising the way that Black women look. So, yeah, I think there's a lot to be said with that as well. Adarshini, do you have anything to add?
Yes. So I was just going to bring up something else because recently I've been listening to a lot of Egyptian hip hop music, and I find that in a lot of their songs and in a lot of their music videos too, they're wearing American brands, there's a lot of Egyptian like clothing and cultural wear and cultural aspects to their music and their music videos. But like, I've been noticing a lot more like, I don't know, like referencing like Gucci and like Nike and all of these like very American, niche American, or not niche, but like originating from America brands, which like, you know, obviously they're meant to show, oh, like this is where I am, like I'm powerful, like you think I'm worthless or you don't think, like it's also braggadocio, and it's coming a lot from female artists, I feel like. It just kind of show that they're worth something and they have that money. Like, I'm making money. Here I am wearing Gucci. But, like, I feel like, I don't know. Like, what do you think, Abiba? Like, do you think that kind of takes away? Like, how do you feel about that? Because, like, obviously it's up to them and it's their choice. And obviously they deserve to be able to, like, say, here I am making money. But, like, it's just, like, in the place of that Nike or that Gucci, it could be like Egyptian cultural clothing or like whatever that country may be. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
That's a good question. That's a really good question. Because it does kind of speaks to what I was talking about in the beginning, where people really do believe that all of hip hop culture in Africa comes from like these American ideas and it's like grounded in American tradition. But I think to answer that question, you have to talk a lot about how political framing and understandings also influence African identity as well. So I do have I do have some references for that, actually, because I think obviously like with understanding kind of political framing, we have to talk about, you know, governmental corruption, decolonization, and what it means to kind of live in like these post colonial power like economies, and how the West and like Euro-American influence, as well as kind of like ideas of wealth, are impacting people's, you know, perception of what they want to say in their music, what kind of messaging they want to send out. And I think it kind of creates this space where you've got like two very separate groups, where you've got some people who are like, I want to be flashy, flashy, bling, bling. And some people who are like, no, I want to use this to kind of rebel and resist. And, you know, we see this like with the Senegalese group, which became a movement, Yenamar. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. But they literally ended up getting a president reelected just through like the power of their songs and the imagery and the visuals that they had. So like really big mobilization things. And I think it also speaks to kind of really interesting relationships, again, with identity as far as like patriotism stuff goes, because I listened to a lot of Liberian hip hop music over the past few months. And one of my favorite Liberian artists, MC Caro, has a really great song that she released like a year or two ago called Goal. And in Goal, she literally has a line that says like, no government toilet for farting. And like the song is, the song is literally about kind of just like chasing your goals and like going after your dreams. But she kind of adds like, I'm proud to be Liberian, but this kind of Liberian context is also kind of difficult for her because of, you know, I think like lack of access to what she considers, you know, to the wealth I think she desires and those sorts of things. So yeah, Deandra, do you have anything to add about that?
Yeah, totally. So I wanted to talk a little bit about Annie as well, just going back on Annie. We talked a little bit earlier about Pink Black Girls, but she has a couple of songs where she is talking about her identity, and she's talking about some things where she's really going against the grain of what people expect her to be as an African woman in the diaspora, as a woman that's coming from, who has Nigerian heritage as well as, you know, being British. And so in her song, I Want, she's really talking about how she's one, taking agency and explicitly talking about what it is that she desires for herself. But in the first verse, she's kind of talking about how being lost in the stew or being lost in trying to figure out who she is. She says, and I quote, identity crisis for me and my crew, we're Black and we're British and African too, but so far removed. I'd like to go back to my mother's land. I'd like mental peace and 100 grand.
Crisis for me and my crew, we're Black and we're British and African too, but so far removed. I'd like to go back to my mother's land. I'd like mental peace and 100 grand and a pen.
And she's so good at what she does. I love Annie. She's one of my favorite artists. She bars on top of bars. But the point is to say that I think this also kind of highlights a little bit of that access thing. You know, when we think about Africans in the diaspora, we have to also take into account the fact that sometimes people don't get their culture passed down to them, or sometimes there's a bit of difficulty when it comes to being able to fully express your heritage. You know, I think if I were to pull from my own personal experiences in traveling to Kenya, one of the things that we really talk about is indigenous languages and how sometimes a lot of students, younger children, don't really have access to that because of elders not passing it down to them, or whether it's like indigenous knowledge with obviously language, but things within their culture too. Sometimes things in culture get kind of lost in the shuffle.
I mean,
if you know what I mean. But it's also equally important that through cultural transmission, people are able to hold on to their culture. And that within itself is an act of resilience. It's rebellion, it's liberation, and all those things. So I think that is really, really important. What do you think, Ardashini?
Absolutely. Like, going back to what you just said about things getting lost in the shuffle, it absolutely is about like that rebellion and that resistance. And what even is the culture? Like, what is the culture of hip hop? Like, because I was reading this article, The Signature of Hip Hop, A Sociological Perspective, and it says, and I'm paraphrasing here, for hip hop culture, the central articulating principle has been located in the concept and discourse of resistance. So really it is about that resistance, you know, that rebellion from, you know, all of the diverse like resistances that the original hip hop artists face. And, you know, going back to what you said about the bling, Abiba, global hip hop has gained a political edge while local American representation is overly commodified with the culture of the bling, is another quote from that same article. Mm-hmm. You know, so like, I feel like it just speaks to everything that you guys were saying there. Like, you know, the American representation is very much like, it feels like less of a resistance to like, you know, because from what the original, I guess, intention was. I guess there are some artists, there are a lot of artists that are doing a great, great job, but there is also a kind of, and how do you say, like, the word for when something...
Like perception?
Yes, yeah. Yes. The perception is just not where, I guess, the original intention was, or, like, in the diaspora where it was supposed to be.
Yeah, and I can kind of piggyback on that a little bit because I've also been listening to this artist. His name is Black Bones. A few of my blog posts are about him. And a lot of the stuff that he talks about, even though it's very braggadocious, very, like, I worked for this, I worked hard for this, a lot of his music is really, really about the bling and really about the money that he's making and kind of not really putting on a front, but kind of putting on a front in order to exude a lot of this confidence. And I think that that's something that makes me think of the first article that you mentioned, Abiba, when it's kind of talking about, oh, how some parts of like American culture are a little into African music and hip hop and stuff. Like, I feel like that's it. Even if I were to pinpoint it, I think it's really just the capitalism. It really is. Like, it's the oh, I have this money and I'm super rich and I can afford anything and everything that I want to afford. And, you know, it doesn't really matter what anybody has to say.
Let me sing about it.
Let me rap about it. Because, like, this is what I care about. And guess what? It's going to keep making me more money.
Yes.
So regardless of if you like it or not, there's somebody out here listening to it. Mm-hmm. And maybe they have this idea of, like, who I am and who they think I am and da da da. But, like, It's the money.
I think they deserve to be there too. They deserve to be at the place where they're like, they're making tons of money and they deserve to be able to sing about it, you know?
And I think that's the important thing about it. I really, really love that quote that you said about Ardashini that you had from the hip hop sociological, that article.
Yes, yes.
About kind of how, I guess, like the grounding or like, you know, formative, I guess, influence or idea in hip hop is this idea of resistance. Mm-hmm. Because I think specifically when we're talking about hip hop in Africa, when you think about what non-African perceptions and images of Africa around the world are, it is this idea of deep, deep poverty,
mm-hmm.
you know, of almost like this just general kind of like loss of luxury and comfort that seemingly the rest of the world experiences and enjoys. This idea of just being one of the most underdeveloped continents, well, the most underdeveloped continent, mm-hmm. like on the planet,
yes.
Right? So, I mean, think about like what kind of resistance it is to kind of come out there and be like, actually, I'm rich.
Yeah.
I have Gucci.
Yes.
The money flows.
Like, yes. I'm cool. You know what I mean? Like, yes. I'm making money. But I think ultimately this really does contribute to this idea of identity, because not only is hip hop in Africa a reclamation of African identity, but it's also a way to, you know, distribute that identity, the real identity. It's mm-hmm. Africans by Africans for Africans that you can put out into the world so they get to tell you who they are.
Exactly.
Instead of us always, you know, trying to impose these ideas of, oh, this is Africa. This is what we think mm-hmm. Africa looks like. Mm-hmm. The Africans can tell you, like, no, like, mm-hmm. this is who I am. Mm-hmm. And they're so specific, and they do it through a medium so many people have interacted with. Exactly. Just the global power of hip hop in a real way. Hip hop is everywhere.
It just hits different.
It hits different.
It really does. Like, I don't know what it is about it, like what it is about the rhythm, the beats. It's just it just is this tool for telling the real story.
Yes.
Like it just is. And
the real.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean that's exactly what it is that identity formation in hip hop in Africa just gives you the real from mm-hmm. people who you can trust. And I think that's who we should be going to more often mm-hmm. when we're looking for, okay, what does it mean to be African? Mm-hmm. What's happening in Africa?
Yeah.
Go look up the hip hop artist. Mm-hmm. Go listen to somebody.
Exactly. And when you have questions, ask them.
And look at the videos.
Look at them.
Yes.
Yes.
Dig deeper, you know, that's the really important part. Like education, I think, is also equally important. That's also why, you know, this class is really important. Like every time I tell somebody, like, oh yeah, I have hip hop in Africa, they're like, Africa is hip hop? Like, yeah.
Exactly.
You actually look it up. Like, it's not just Afro beats. It's not just there's more to it, you know, and that's what's so important about like digging deep and really looking in it, and really, even if that's a medium that you want to use to like learn a language, like that's kind of what I did when it came to Swahili. When I found Shoma Joseph, I was like, she's speaking Swahili. I don't know what she's saying, but I kind of want to know. So why don't I go and learn a little bit? And now I know that Swahili has over 200 million speakers worldwide, you know,
yes.
And now I'm one of them, you know? So like, even all of that, it's still equally important that we formulate ideas, really dive into like our curiosity, and using hip hop as a tool for that is like, you can learn so many more stories versus just what you're seeing like on the news or like something that somebody told you through the grapevine or those history books that be lying and stuff mm-hmm. like that. So I think that's equally important.
And we encourage you guys to do the same.
Yes, yes. Everybody go listen to some African hip hop. Yes. But if I had to kind of sum it all up, I want everyone to kind of think of that quote, that clip of Andre 3000 at, was it the Grammys? When he wins that award, when Outkast wins an award and Andre 3000 gets on the mic and says, the South has something to say. The global South has something to say. Mm-hmm. And they're saying it through hip hop.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Africa's telling us who Africa is through hip hop. And I think it'd be great.
We just have to listen.
Yes, all we have to do is listen. It'd be great if more people listen to it and we could all learn something from it.
There's pink black girls in my area, cold, dark skin, light skin, medium tones. Pumped in grays, got mini afros. Thick lips, got hips, some of us don't. Big nose contour, some of us won't. Never wanna put us in the media, bro. Want a fat booty like Kardashians. Want a fat booty that my auntie got, yo. We love the block.
This has been Continental Cadences, where hip-hop just hits different. We are DeAndre Blake,
Adarshini Vijesh,
and the Biba Moncrief.
Thank you guys so much for listening.
Odabo!
Or Hedy! Bye!
Bye-bye!
Thank you for listening to this episode of Continental Cadences. Continental Cadences is produced by Hip Hop and Social Change in Africa. This episode features sound and music by Eni and Shoma Josie.
We love, we fight, we hurt, we cry. He paid the price, you'll be alright.